My name is Yevgeny Elgert, and I'm from Johns Hopkins APL, and I'm going to present the work on improvements to chief complaint processor based on analysis of comprehensive ambulatory patient encounter record. And so this presentation is radically different from the presentation before me, and Charlie was trying not to load you with data, and I mean, that's exactly what I'm going to do, load you up with data. So, but just to add to what you guys were talking about, in the process of this project that I'm presenting here, we went through thousands of chief complaints, as reviewers, and my feeling is that when you read what's actually written, I mean, you can't really codify it. Like, words don't really make a sentence. You cannot really break a sentence into words. So every time you read something, you get a much more holistic picture of what's going on. So it's just impossible to really replace a sentence with a bunch of checkboxes. I mean, just, again, looking at 30,000 chief complaints in the process of this project. So what... Okay, so why is this presentation... Charlie mentioned the core business processes, the syndrome-based, new data source, and monitoring data qualities, and this presentation is about all of it, but applied just to one data source. Now, this data source, this data source is the military outpatient visits, all the military outpatient visits, and the new data source that came in has, in addition to ICD-9 codes, it has a chief complaint field. And basically, we are doing everything. We're reviewing the syndromes, so it's a syndrome-based. It's a new data source, and we're also monitoring data quality. The project-related goals were upgrading Essence because the old chief complaint processor, or let's say it's the same chief complaint processor, but the way they applied it was applied to civilian chief complaints, which has their own patterns and so on. So in this work, we're actually testing, whether the military chief complaints are different or not, and also to test the correspondence between the chief complaints and ICD-9 codes. So also improving syndromic groupings, and again, testing the adaptability of our chief complaint processor. And then finally, maybe building more general and more specific, more specific and more sensitive syndrome groupings based on both ICD-9 and chief complaint data. So this is the old slide from, I think, Carol Snigowski presentation, who actually was the one who built the chief complaint processor at APL, which is used in Essence. So you have ICD-9 codes on one side and chief complaints on the other, and we're trying to match them all into these syndromes, into these 10 syndromes. And most syndromic surveillance systems are doing that and using approximately the same syndrome list. And then there are syndromes and sub-syndromes, and you create count, daily counts, and then you graph it and so on and so forth. And this is another slide from the same presentation. So the data comes in, the uncoded chief complaint data, then you normalize the text strings, you remove the punctuation marks, then you use some keyword weighting, fuzzy matching, nonlinear processing in order to come up with which syndrome the data goes into. Then use the syndrome structure and then copy the data and, you're done. It's all good. So this is, more in detail presentation of the same thing. It just sort of shows the capacity of our chief complaint processor. So this chief complaint string, which is not, this is often what you see, is this some strange abbreviations like PTST and VDX 33 days. There are a system of files. There is an abbreviation file which, with a list of all the current abbreviations, all the most frequent abbreviations, which will translate NVD into nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. There is a dictionary file that keeps things, the untouchable words. So like never, never becomes fever, or swine never becomes spine. So there is a dictionary of things. Then there are syndromes and syndrome terms. So syndrome terms, each word is weighted according whether it's applicable to a particular syndrome or a sub-syndrome, and then they're grouped together in the rules file into syndromes and syndrome groups. And there are some stop words that are removed during the processing, and And then there are syndromes, basically, which is the final result. So this thing actually, before, in our civilian version, it would have become patient sore throat, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. But actually, we don't really want that. We want patient states, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, because majority of things in the military, ST was actually the sore throat. I mean, was the states, not the sore throat. So a little bit about the CAPR data. The CAPR data, again, it's the data about all the military beneficiaries using TRICARE insurance, and I think there are about 5 million military beneficiaries. This data is fed in the BioSense, as I understand, and I think it's, people are starting to process it and learn about it as well. So it's called Comprehensive Ambulatory Patient Encounter Record, replacing standard ambulatory data record, which only had 4 ICD-9 codes and a few CPTs. Now there are up to 10 ICD-9 codes plus reason for visit and reason for this whole presentation. So it covers all the MTFs in the world. And we got a significant chunk of data. So we have 5+ years worth of data from beginning of 2006 to September of 2010, which is about 250 million records. And I'm not sure if it's single ICD-9 codes or it's actually records, but even if it's records, it would be about 180 million visits, which is a lot. And then about 12% of those are syndromic according to ICD-9 codes. So the methodology that we picked. So at first, we had about 3 months worth of data to begin with, to start this process, and we were waiting for the whole data to arrive. So first we decided to discuss the clinical groupings with the sponsor, and we decided to basically test all the syndromes. So we started with a few, but decided, let's just do all of them. So pull a sample of 1,000 most frequent and 1,000 random records for each syndrome. Then each reviewer went through the process of reviewing those 2,000 records, and then we had some which were suspicious and some that we disagreed on, and then the disagreements we sort of put in an email, sent it to the public health expert, and then kind of reviewed the improvements with them. So we ran the chief complaint processor on the input files, make changes, make a study set, make contingency tables, make changes on a small set, rerun it, see if it's doing everything correctly, and then go back if necessary, to check everything, whether the new chief complaint groupings make sense, and then document it, and we're done. So what I expected at first, and actually that's sort of what happened, was improved chief complaint syndrome definitions, correct typos and junk, and we're going to get this improved sensitivity, specificity, and we're done. But somewhat in the middle of this project, I was actually not so sure that we're going to improve anything. Just looking at some things, and partially is, that the chief complaints and ICD-9 codes are different. Although I've seen a lot of, we all have seen a lot of different papers where they say, when people take like 1,000 records, go back to the emergency room, look at all the syndrome definitions, look at the actual case history, and then there's 80% matching or something like this. But it is quite different. However, I did, at the end, we still came up with minor but improvements in sensitivity and more major improvements in specificity. So again, this is just reviewing the process. We had three sample, these are the reviewers on the left. We ran it on a 3-month sample of data. So we consulted with CDC definitions of the syndromes, and then the expert reviewers check agreement record by record basis. So this was an example of the bot-like that we went through. So, and that's, again, this is based on 3 months. So there are 380 dysphagias, and we both agreed, because we looked at the syndrome definition, that dysphagia should be part of bot-like. And, the same with blurry vision, and then I just threw out some zeros like weakness. I guess I didn't agree that weakness should be part of bot-like. But anyways, in this whole process, so the next 10 slides describe just, syndrome by syndrome what we did. And just to say that the public health expert was also our DoD sponsor, so he made some decisions, and we actually wanted him to make decisions. So and he's responsible for them, I guess, and he's not here to speak for it. And by the way, I did not thank Howard and him, Dr. Cox from Army Health Surveillance Center, because they are the major contributors of this work, obviously. Yeah. So, but the notable general exclusions from all this process was the procedures. So, like MRI, post-op, pre-op biopsy results, evaluation, immunization, vaccination, and so on, medications. So a lot of them would say, refill on meds, or patient needs meds, or actually give a specific medication. Then the major thing, the major exclusion was the follow-up visits. I think maybe 20% of the records that we excluded were because of the follow-up. And then there are routine visits, and that's partially because it's a DoD data set, and a lot of recruits have to go through annual checkups and physicals. A lot of them have to get vaccinated when they travel overseas and stuff like that. So, history, annual checkup, recurrent physical, all this. So, and then just going syndrome by syndrome, in blue, in the light blue, you see the CDC definition, and what we did, and in the black, just below it was the the groupings that we had before and the groupings that we had after. Looking at the groupings we had before, we had altered mental status, dizziness, drowsiness, encephalitis, headache and fever, projectile vomiting, prostration, or seizure, or sighted weakness. We basically got rid of most of them, because actually a lot of them have they imply neurological conditions, but they don't really imply the neurological infections. And I think major neurological infections are encephalitis and meningitis, which are there specifically. But, so what we did, we got rid of dizziness and drowsiness, and actually we also got rid of encephalitis, partially because Aaron Kite Powell from Florida Department of Health, they created a group, because our chief complaint processor allows for that, they created a new syndrome which is called records of interest. So one reason for it is that if people are already starting to put encephalitis in the chief complaint field, they know about it. They usually, they don't really put the chief complaint. So it's not very timely. And the second thing, it will go in the records of interest group anyways, and somebody will have to review it. So we just decided to delete it from the neuro. And all the other things, like dizziness, there are a lot of people who would be classified into this, people who have strokes or cardiac events and heat waves, heat strokes and stuff like that. But they're not really about, neurologic infectious problem. So we left altered mental status partially. We saw one outbreak of meningitis. There are two people who died from meningitis in one of the MTFs, and they did have altered mental status in the chief complaint. So that was one of the reasons why we kept it. And they also had headache, fever, and vomiting. And the other thing, we added stiff neck, which is a standard symptom of the meningitis, which wasn't there. So stiff neck group basically has stiff neck, pain in the neck, and stuff like that. And the notable exclusions, they actually they went away by themselves because we got rid of those groups. But while those groups were in there, cerebral palsy, apnea, and sleep study, and annual consult were the major exclusions. So going back, so the next one is the GI, and that's more or less straightforward, except there was a group of loss of appetite. And loss of appetite, at least in the MTF, in the DoD data set, was about babies who stopped feeding. Baby, doesn't suck or something like this, but it can be anything. It can be, it doesn't have to be necessarily a GI event. And again, consulting. So one thing we did, when we did remove a certain thing, we would go back into our bigger data set and look at ICD-9 codes, look which clinic the person went to, which DMAS it's from, and so on, just to make sure that we're not excluding something that's valuable. So, but the loss of appetite seemed like not very many of them were actually from the, should be classified in the GI group. And there are a lot of notable exclusions, because before, things like N and V and D, just the letter N, V, and D, if it was by itself, it would just automatically be processed into nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. And you know, with this number of records, there are things like Dr. N, Dr. V. This VF thing was a view field, so during a routine vision checkup, you know, they had the view field, so they would just put VF. And, you know, V became vomiting, and it would automatically get classified into GI. NP, I'm not even sure what it was, but it wasn't a GI, I didn't remember. And then we had some rule-outs, like injury post-op bypass that I already mentioned. Running watery, not enough for qualification. I think it had a higher weight, which would put it in the syndrome group. Then the stomach, there was something on stomach, and not in, you know, and obviously that's an external thing, so we had to put on stomachs out of the GI. And then something about gas mask, blood gas exposure, gas chamber would also get classified in GI because of the gas. And finally, AGE is not always acute gastroenteritis, it's just age sometimes. But there are cases when it would be like AGE, URI, so by itself we would not classify it. So the RASP, this is just the definition of RASP because it's so huge. But one thing about it, just to notice, that it excludes chronic and allergic. And basically, that's the exclusions that we added to this. So the major thing that we did was just to add chronic and allergic, so create two groups, which are chronic and allergic. And all the, like, rhinitis and, you know, chronic sinusitis, allergic rhinitis, all of this would go out of the syndrome, because this is what we did with ICD-9 codes. We specifically removed those ICD-9 codes from it. Again, STs, states, not sore throat. Then difficulty breathing after running much, parade exercise, so that's sports and exercise related. With ROM, it's in military setting, it's range of motion, it's not rhytotitis media. There are a huge number of ROMs. Again, you know, those would come. And then PHA is personal health assessment and not pharyngitis. And then we decided, Dr. Cox decided to draw blood spit because, you know, it is sometimes occurring with pneumonia and bronchitis, but it's not super common with acute infectious conditions otherwise, and it's presented in other conditions. ILI was one of the simple ones. The only thing we did was just to, you know, subtract the exclusions from it. And the very big thing was the 2009 H1N1 vaccinations, because they would put all kinds of things in this chief complaint. It would be 2009 number one, H1N1 number two, IMM something. All vaccine manufacturers and so on were in there. So basically, we ended up just taking it out by using ICD-9 code. So the ICD-9 code are like V.04, which is the infectious immunization against infectious diseases, or V70.5, which is just the routine vaccination or something. We just took them out for this project. And that's actually one of the ways how we can use the ICD-9 codes, the chief complaints, together, you know, just to improve specificity. Other than that, so there are like 100,000 of those. So it was a huge number. And then there's strep results, cold run clinic, which was some nickname for some clinic in the out of nowhere, and positive strep test. Again, rash was another big syndrome, partially because anything that was like spots, bumps, lesions, that would get classified as rash. Although, you know, lesions sometimes refer to tumors. Lesions sometimes refer to, you know, to tears in the shoulder, to some like osteochondral lesions. And so we had to actually create another big group, which was just rash rule-outs by themselves. And rule-out, you know, eye spots, shaving bumps, some spots, road rash, moleskin spots, Caffaele spots, and, you know, the vaginal spotting, all the tumors and procedures and, you know. And I think that was the big thing here. Botulism-like was another big one. Even in definition, you have this acute descending motor paralysis, and what we were looking before was this acute sense of or blurred vision, or difficulty focusing, or difficulty speaking, or difficulty swallowing, or dilated pupils. And you can imagine that those things, because it was just or, we had a huge number of bot-like in the chief complaint. So what we ended up doing, you know, one thing, the presentation of botulism is different in children, and the possible chief complaints are also different. So we separated And since our chief complaint processor allows for it, we created a one condition was, this condition was age-based, so for age less than one, we had one set of rules. For age greater than one, we had another set of rules. We created like descending weakness group, and we also we wanted for them to happen simultaneously. So we weren't looking just for dysphagia or double vision, but if two of them would happen together, we would we would track it. Otherwise, we would disregard it. And then sometimes there would be like sore throat with dysphagia, which would sometimes get classified in into both like. Okay, fever was another simple one. Again, all the, Q fever and Rocky Mountain fever, yellow fever were put in the records of interest, and we only kept chills or fever and not exclusions, and that was very simple. We dropped the febrile disease because a lot of, I think in the new essence, the febrile disease will be dropped from ICD-9 codes as well, because a lot of it is just the same as fever, and we decided to get rid of it. And finally, shock coma. The fields, loss of consciousness. Again, all kinds of things would go into loss of consciousness. And the shock. There are a lot of shocks that were just electrocution shock, or just person who is in some kind of psychological shock. Most of the shocks were of this nature, and there are very few the actual shocks that we want to capture in shock coma syndrome. So we kept septic shock and toxic shock. So if it would actually specifically say, toxic shock or a septic shock or some combination of these words or derivatives from it, we would put it in the syndrome. So when we kept coma death, coma, which includes death, septic shock and toxic shock. And we also dropped hemorrhagic illness for sort of the same reason as the febrile disease. We're looking for these exotic fevers. Was it like Ebola and the presenting conditions are somewhat similar, except we're thinking of maybe creating one where we'd look for bleeding from several orifices, but we decided for now to drop it from the chief complaints. So coming to results finally. So I have several slides explaining kind of one set of results. So I'll just start with this. Table on the up there. So the old, so you have a syndrome and you have old and new. So the old is the old chief complaint processor with old syndrome definitions. Actually, definitions that we borrowed from Aaron Kite Powell, because he modified some of our chief complaint definitions in a way that we really wanted to keep. And the new definitions are using the the changes that we made in this during this work. And you can see that for BOT-like, which had 450,000 CIF complaints were classified, and BOT-like we came down to 648. In this case, like numbers speak for themselves. And sort of the same thing with shock coma, from 130,000 down to 378. And I think there are like 300 cases of botulism in like last 10 years in the United States. So this is much more reasonable if you think about it. And the other big one was neuro, because we dropped all the prostration and loss of consciousness and so on. So it also decreased about fivefold. And the other ones, there was a slight decrease, not as dramatic, but again, and these are things that we actually want to keep. And so if you look this, the old, and then these go into these contingency tables. So the old went into the ones that were coded as ICD-9 code as yes, there are 2,700 of those, and ICD-9 code as no is 430,000. So, the table on top is just chief complaint processor. The two tables on the bottom are the old and the new, also adding, whether it was classified into a particular syndrome using ICD-9 code. So it's just so it's easier to understand. And you can actually see that sensitivity dropped, but at the same time, we don't really know what it should be. But that's so now these are all the syndromes, and basically these numbers are like those two contingency tables. And on the right, I summarize them into sensitivity and specificity for old and new. And you can see that specificity increased everywhere, which is something to be expected. And sensitivity also increased almost everywhere except for the sarcoma and the blood-like, where we just cut off a huge number of cases. The only other thing I think I might have included, it could have been even a little better. I think when I was doing this table, I did keep the empty chief complaints. And just to mention that out of those 250 million records, about 30% were blank. There was a huge number of blank ICD-9 codes as well, but just to mention this. And about 5 or 10% which said just one thing, ALTA, which is the name of the system that was. But still, there is a lot, it's still very, very meaningful. So, being a statistician and also trying to answer some of the questions that Charlie was asking, I also went ahead and I looked at some of the known outbreaks in our data, and just I wanted to see whether, for the same syndrome, our chief complaint counts. So when you take all this data, you classify it into syndromes, create daily counts, and graph it. So I did it for several known outbreaks in our DOD population. I just wanted to know whether they look similar. And actually, after several attempts, they do look similar. Because at first I just made some mistakes and whatever. and they do look very similar. The counts are very similar as well. In blue you have the CAPER ILI, so which is ICD-9 code-based ILI. In orange you have chief complaint-based influenza-like illness. And you have these dots on top which indicate alerts. So for different levels of significance, I looked at also the number of alerts. So the more significance, the less the p-value, the less alerts you're going to have. So you can see that the number of alerts is approximately similar as well. And just by the placements of those green and red dots on these graphs, you can see that they occur approximately the same places. And the actual outbreak, which I think was the H1N1, occurred in the July of 2009. So you see this huge spike in both the orange and the blue. And they happen approximately at the same time. We also have a sort of rule to monitor the fever syndrome with the ILI syndrome, so just to make sure. And fever looks also very, very similar. Sorry for the color scheme. But you can still see that they're like right on top of each other. In fact, in this case, they're a little bit more chief records were classified by the chief complaint processor as fever than by ICD-9 code, not unlike the ILI case. But again, our ILI definition by ICD-9 code is very broad. It's very broad. So, and there are actually a little bit less alerts if you're using the chief complaint. But again, the algorithm that we are using is the standard essence algorithm. So it's actually looking for structure in the data. So if you have smaller data counts, you're probably going to have more alerts with it. But again, the number of alerts is approximately similar. Another outbreak. And this one, when did it happen? I think it was also H1N1, but a little bit later in the year. And again, like the same patterns. There are actually more alerts with chief complaints because there are smaller numbers with chief complaints for ILI than for ICD-9 code-based. And so this is the same thing but with fever. And actually you can see the outbreak much better around the September 2009. Alerts approximately the same places and the same number of alerts for both definitions. And finally, just to change syndrome, and since we actually only had the ILI and GI outbreaks in our set, this is the, I think, maybe the Norwich-like virus event. which is happening in this facility very often, because all the recruits come together and you have a norovirus outbreak which lasts for a couple of days and then goes away. So there are several events in there, but all of them, and actually this is even better than fever and ILI, you can see that they are like right on top of another, exactly the same number. And again, with chief complaints, you get maybe a little bit more counts. And so just to summarize our findings, I mean, I think this work was a success. We did update, I mean, we tested our chief complaint processor in a huge number of cases, and hopefully we made it more robust, you know. So when we encounter even like the third big data set, you know, something new happens, you know, the patterns change. Hopefully we'll be able to code them a little bit better, but it's definitely that we have to stay on top of this, because the coding patterns do change. You know, people put different strings. I mean, and all this work that we are doing, and it's definitely changing the way people are describing things. So we refined syndrome groups and definitions for chief complaints. We did slightly improve sensitivity and specificity, and there was a great reduction of smaller syndromes. We did test everything on real data. We got very similar results for both chief complaints and ICD-9 codes, which is encouraging. One number that I didn't put here, overall, like I said, there are 12% syndromic visits based on ICD-9 code. So there are like 27 million syndromic visits based on ICD-9 code versus about 17 million total based on the chief complaint. So the, you know, number was less. But still, it's a pretty huge number, and actually it's much more specific in some ways. Similar performance in real outbreaks. So for the future, we didn't really have time to work on this so much, but obviously, you know, there is room for creating a very an improved syndromes based on both ICD-9 codes and chief complaints, for sure. I mean, and I kind of used it somewhat in trying to discard some records which were immunizations, but you can also improve ICD-9 codes by using the one, you know, with all our rule out categories like follow up and so on, you know, because there's still a huge number of ICD-9 code data that shouldn't be in the syndromic groupings. So right now what we are working on is actually fusing this data. So we're using, you know, kind of a Bayesnet-like technique and using these data sources separately in order to come up with with improved performance. And this is one thing, but of course it would be probably better and in the future just to try and create a, you know, more specific and more sensitive syndrome groups based on both data sets. And finally, there is a work to, you know, reconfigure ICD-9 codes to ICD-10 codes, and this is also in the future for this. And I guess this is it. Thank you very much.
So do we have more questions for our speakers? And we have about 15 minutes left, so just to remind everybody too, this is being recorded, so it will be available online. And also, our speaker's contact information is on the PHI website as well. So, but I have the mic, so if you guys want to ask some more questions. No?
I see a benefit for public health to use the syndromic surveillance infrastructure to approximate as best possible the occurrence of the disease in the population and to track it over time and to, you know, look for, based on the identified, you know, data such as age and, you know, maybe a zip code of residence and date and time of occurrence, to monitor a whole range of conditions in the population. And it would have public health benefit in terms of highlighting the occurrence of a whole range of public health conditions, many of which we don't do a very good job conducting surveillance for currently. and probably the vast majorities are non-infectious, you know. And I understand a lot of this was developed for infectious purposes and outbreak purposes and all. So, you know, getting around to somehow standardizing that, I think, ought to be a kind of a joint project that, you know, collaborators in public health at a variety of levels ought to be working on to standardize things, to do everything possible to generate comparability of data across jurisdictions and within jurisdictions over time. And I think one of the major contributions, and I was thrilled to see it, and Peter, who's sitting next to me, we talked about it, is a catalog of what you might call case definitions, where you refine your algorithm for searching for these conditions and to try and, you know, develop them to the point where they're as sensitive and specific as possible. And, you know, maybe even, I mean, it occurred to me as I saw them, it reminded me of like a Wikipedia thing where if somebody got interested in heat stroke, they could go to the Wikipedia and see all the work that other collaborators had done. And, you know, you may encounter somebody who's got the time and the interest and expertise to perhaps refine that to say, well, I, you know, and our team just looked at it here in the last couple of weeks. In fact, maybe there's going to be a reviewer in here who sees one of my staff's abstract. Look on it favorably, please. But we put an abstract in for ISDS looking at heat stroke, given the heat wave that swept the country here. And given our newness and naivety to the project, we went ahead and developed probably a relatively primitive case definition with search terms, et cetera. But it would be nice to have had, say, a Wikipedia resource and then to have looked at that to see if we felt it really had been appropriately worked on or whether we felt we might perhaps be able to add something to it and refine it and had the bandwidth to devote personnel, time, and expertise to optimizing its sensitivity and specificity. And, you know, I was struck by the richness of the work you did in refining the case definition and figuring out what to negate, et cetera. And that's the kind of work, you know, that I think it ought to be shared, you know, so that individuals don't have to go out and recreate that kind of stuff.
I just wanted to say it was an enormous privilege to work with Dr. Kenneth Cox on this because of his years of clinical experience, plus of his thorough knowledge of the military population. And there were a number of things he told us when we went through chief complaints that we would have never guessed. And also, when we saw hundreds of record chief complaints with only the single word smallpox. And we said, do we throw them up? We throw them all out, and he would say things like, keep, rule out smallpox, delete all the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of that sort of thing, and a lot we didn't know, like standard testing that the military have to do. And so I think there's a lot to be gained from that to other populations who look at their chief complaints that... and I've heard other people say that there's things you need to know about this population, plus the fact that there seem to be hundreds of ways to express immunization in a chief complaint.
One thing I sort of didn't mention, but I was going to, was that there needs to be a periodic review of both chief complaints and ICD-9 codes. I mean, we're also working now for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And because that population is older and sicker, you know, some of the ICD-9 codes that create our syndrome groups, they're just not. I mean, we overpopulated with junk. So, for example, on the Bot-Likes syndrome, we decided only to take records from the emergency room. So, you know, this process has to be repeated, and for each, I mean, in some ways, there has to be data quality with each data source, which Charlie said before. Just.
And I just want to continue on that because I think this issue of the variation across institutions and maybe even across providers or physicians in how they code or triage nurses, in how they actually code what a patient says to them in a free text chief complaint is a really important issue in this type of surveillance because all surveillance, we start with a case definition, right? And we want to have a consistent case definition. Otherwise, everyone will say, well, there's no point in doing surveillance. You're just mixing things up here. So, of course, we want a common conceptual definition, like fever or influenza-like illness, but how do you turn that into a real definition within an EMR? You've got to actually get into the, you know, the weeds about it, and this is what you've been doing, right? But I guess the question to you is, how much variation did you see across treatment facilities, or did you even look at that issue? The reason I bring that up is because, and Howard, you can probably speak to this more eloquently than I, but we've looked at this issue around the distribute sites that Charlie mentioned in the context of ILI and tried to understand, can you really, you know, from a conceptual definition for ILI that's consistent, try and enforce a common sort of syntactical definition across sites? And what does that do to the data you get back? Does it make it look more consistent or less consistent? So,
well, you know, I mentioned that we had, 2,000 record samples that we looked at. One was the most frequent ones, and 1,000, which were just random. But basically, they were random somewhere from the bottom. So the ones that are frequent, they were much more, they would just say the same thing, basically. So, and we saw a lot of it, you know. So it was almost like a computer-like thing, you know, cough, sore throat, blah, blah, that's it. And then the ones at the bottom, they went into length, you know, saying then the patient came and, you know, mom said that and he said that and so on. So there's a very big discrepancy between them. Also, in this data set, you know, different people actually coded. So you can get a chief complaint from a nurse, you can get, you know, from a triage nurse, you can get a chief complaint from a physician. So sometimes different people fill this out, and so there is a big discrepancy. So definitely. We've seen a lot of it. I mean, Howard, do you want to add anything?
No, I think that covers it pretty well. We encourage Dr. Cox to submit a more medical version of this to the ISDS conference, and he did. So he will go into, like, what does he think, what kind of a presentation do these syndromes suggest to him? And so it's sort of the other side of this.
So Tom and I had a discussion about this at length yesterday. One of the things I'm trying to promote, so I'm on the BioSense program at CDC, trying to promote establishing a catalog or a compendium that enumerates all of the variability for all of these definitions from all of these different systems. And some of the discussion in years past was, there's a right definition. Well, that just seems a little naive. There isn't a right definition. And David's right, and in terms of identifying there's institutional biases and how things are encoded and captured and stored, but there's also population level biases. I mean, what does hot blood mean? What does fell out? The patient said they fell out. You know, hot blood, that means high blood pressure in mm-hmm. some populated patients. Yep. So how do you include that and recognize that that's suddenly not saying there's some terrible contamination going on somewhere but I think it's we can work as a community to try to pull all these things together. And we've got so many different, on the BioSense program, it's a patchwork of systems. So we have data from the VA and the DOD and a number of different state-level systems. Recently we encountered an anomaly that I thought you were saying Bud Light for a while, and I was looking at my drink card, making certain I had one, but and hoping they offer something stiffer than that. But we had identified a bot-like mm-hmm. Illness in a facility in somewhere in Kansas, and it turned out it was a facility that had the National Fire Range Academy. This is where they have young men learn how to shoot cannons and blow things up, and so where it flagged for botulism was blurred vision of NOS, mm-hmm. and so visual disturbances, actually. And so we knew it wasn't botulism, but it was really weird and occurred over a period of several days. And it turned out they had a new optometrist doing eye exams, and he didn't know the code, so he goes, well, it's something to do with eyes, and it's this one. And it kind of raised, we let him know, but it raised some flags. They thought maybe this was a real event. We were thinking maybe it was PPE, that maybe a bunch of new recruits were identified, trained how to use eye protective gear, or I think there was also some fires in the neighborhood. So, but understanding those nuances seems absolutely incredibly important in terms of syndromic surveillance across all of these different activities. And I hope we can all work together on that.
Absolutely. Peter.
Can I mention one other point? And this goes to the ICD chief complaint. At the beginning of this project, I thought we were going to get all the ones that didn't have codes get their chief complaints and pool them to make one syndrome. As we moved into it, Yevgeny started to tell me, no, we can't do that. They're capturing different information. And as we went on, he was right. We, and in the fusion, we wound up treating them as different data sources. So I thought that was, and when he said we weren't sure we were going to get anything out of it, I think that those doubts were what that was about, but he was right, and I think they really should be treated differently.
My name is Sherry Davidson from Alabama, and we currently don't have a syndromic surveillance in place, but we did get introduced to text fields when we had an intern that was working between us and the ambulance data. Mm-hmm. And so he wrote a lot of SAS code, and, you know, for an intern, he was absolutely fabulous. So, you know, that was our introduction into it, where he was trying to find out. Our main focus was the oil spill, looking for people who were having ambulance runs associated with oil spill side effects. But even looking for the word oil, he had to control for baby oil. I'm not sure what that had to do with. But and then he would be looking for pregnancy or pregnant, but then he had to control for all the times they would write not pregnant or no fever. So he was having to control for the anti-symptoms, actually. So that was something new that we would not have thought of.
Sure. And I'm not plugging our chief complaint processor, but actually it's fairly useful. I'm the user of it as well. So we had to make all these definitions with the words not and so on. And it was quite adaptable to these things. I also worked just making SAS programs for the same thing on other projects when they're looking like for CO exposure. The chief complaint. So I know exactly what you're talking about. So many different ways of putting things down. So, and another thing I wanted to mention about Peter's comment was that, you know, in our sort of syndrome definition, we can actually sort of list the way of things that would get coded into, you know, into a hot and heat stroke, for example, very easily. You know, you can just like provide the set of syndromes that we're, a set of words that we're using for that. So it would be very, very simple. So I guess if there would be a similar solution in terms of, let's say, a processor of chief complaints, which would use these kind of standard files, like we have just comma-separated files, like I showed in the beginning. We have comma-separated files of terms, you know, that are treated a certain way, you know, and then there are these like not terms as well. So, I think it would be interesting or to create something like this together, that other people could use, like open source or something.
All right, so now I get to be the bearer of bad news.
So please.
To tie a couple of these comments back together.
Right.
The Wikipedia catalog concept is very interesting, and it works great if you're working in a purely keyword-based system. So I'm hacking together some SAS to look for some keywords. Mm-hmm. However, not all of these chief complaint processing tools do that. There are some, like ours, that have dictionary systems and fuzzy matching logic and abbreviations and context negation. So now that simple definition of a free text term changes in our world quite a bit. And so if you're hoping to standardize on a definition like Atar and some other folks I know we've worked with in the past, they'll hand me a piece of SAS code and it doesn't translate into our chief complaint processor the same way. Mm-hmm. Because we have some built-in capabilities that kind of go above and beyond in a lot of cases what they were thinking of they wanted. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean we need to create a chief complaint processor that dumbs down some of the fuzzy matching and misspelling capabilities just so that it can be a standard or not? So that's sort of a, you know, that makes me a little queasy. Now, what we have done in the past, because Essence allows you to do free text queries from the user interface, not chief complaint processing it into syndromes, but the user can build a on-the-fly chief complaint query, that's where we kind of came up with the catalog concept a little bit closer. So now we've got user groups who can post chief complaint queries that they've done and had success with for heat exposure and things like that, where it's not a predefined syndrome that these processors are going through and categorizing, but it's something done sort of ad hoc on the fly, but now it can be a little bit more consistent across at least the Essence sites because they use a very common structure.
Wayne brings up a good point of what we do not want to accomplish, because a single definition is not going to work. But a compendium for reference,
right,
to understand, oh, that's how you had got that, this is how I got there,
yes, I
to help inform my internal process and help our friends in Alabama who don't have to build this from scratch and looking at this as a brave new world. And that's what this catalog concept's about. It's not trying to impose or restrict in any manner or way. It's to inform.
And this will be the last question because I didn't notice it was five. So.
I want to say thank you for that's an incredible amount of work. And what it makes me think about you, and we talked about how there are differences in military populations and other populations, but I also wanted to refer to some of the work that Howard's done with the distributed ILI data about looking at sub-syndrome definitions. So, for example, there was this consistent, and perhaps Howard could talk about it more, but the thing that struck me was that if you look at flu, fever and cough, fever and sore throat, and you looked at that those sub-syndrome definitions and how they consistently varied when you looked by age. So, for example, many fewer would say flu for a young child, they'd say fever and cough, whereas older populations, you'd see many more would say flu. So that'd be, you know, when you have time, another very interesting way to look at this data to tell you again about how people report chief complaint, not just geographically, but also based on other things such as age.
Certainly. Thank you.
Howard might want to respond.
This distributed talk was given at JSM, and actually an epidemiologist from Polk County was in the audience, and she was able to explain the phenomenon. She said that when children, when children are diagnosed with ILI, then they're more likely to give specific symptoms, because she said the differential diagnosis for children with ILI is larger. And so with an adult, they're more likely to just put down flu. And then someone else said, well, aren't adults also more likely to self-report? Well, yes, so that was the other explanation. So both of these things came into it. It was a good discussion.
Thank you.
So I'm sure these guys will hang out for a second if you guys have more questions, but that's it. Thanks,
Thank you
guys. Thanks, presenters.